Session number 15433.
Side 12. You were doing pseudo training with Salu Scouts.
Yeah.
In briefest terms, what were did the Salu Scout training differ terribly much from SAS training?
It did, yeah, because the selection was much the same, but they did what was called a dark phase, where they actually lived as terrorists with former terrorists running it for them.
Right.
So they see you live in a terrorist base, and then they say tack, attack, attack, sort of thing. That's a helicopter. They'd all go to ground. Can you see that? And they'd actually live, act, behave.
What was the purpose of that then?
Well, there was a helicopter coming. The idea was to tell them, you know, how to get out of the way of helicopters.
I'm talking about the actual Salu Scout, the ordinary Salu Scout basic training and selection. That was involved. That was part of that.
Yeah, it was called the dark phase.
All right. To get into the mind of a terrorist,
yeah,
was it?
To learn them how to think like a terrorist and act like them, because with the pseudo gangs, some of them actually went in there and posed as terrorists.
Right.
Can you see that? And they were good at it.
How long were you involved with that?
The pseudo phase of it is... Basically, when I say pseudo phase, it was never to the standard of scouts. What I had was guys who worked in blue jeans. Can you see what I'm getting at? I did that for about four or five months.
Right.
Yeah.
And that brought you up to the independence, did it? Or?
Yeah. And then I got involved in a couple of little special branch things. We did a thing called exchange or pair.
So that means?
Aye, we went down to South Africa and did a job for the South Africans.
And whereabouts was that?
We did a raid into a town called Namacha.
Where's that?
That's in southern Mozambique. And we actually infiltrated through the Mozambique, through Swaziland, then back into Mozambique, and then hit a terrorist house in a place called Namacha.
Yes. When was that? 19...
That was 79.
All right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right. And how many from... Who was that? Who from Rhodesia went on that raid?
There was eight of us.
From what, Special Branch?
From Special Branch.
Right.
They were all ex-SAS chaps.
Extradition SAS.
Yeah.
Yeah. Were they foreign?
Yeah.
They're all foreign?
Everyone who was foreign.
Foreign?
Yeah.
And where did you operate from in South Africa?
We went to a place called Komati Port. We drove for Rhodesia, went to Komati Port.
Which is on the border with?
Yeah.
And with
Mozambique.
Mozambique.
Yeah.
Yeah. And which is what, about 12, it's about 20 kilometres from Maputo, isn't it?
Yeah. No, I couldn't actually tell
you. Well, it's an hour's drive or something.
But that story was really funny. We actually went into town, done the business, and I told the South Africans, we were totally blackened up. And I said to them, you know, have some water ready for us, you know, to wash this camouflage cream off. And we got there, and you know, the South Africans are really macho about their beer and whatnot. I arrived and all they had was beer, there was no water. So, I mean, we've been running all night to get back. And, you know, our lips are sort of cracked at it. It says, yeah, here's beer, and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, we sort of drunk about three bottles of beer. The next thing, we're all drunk.
Sure.
You know, and I says, you must get us water. So we finally found an old sort of bath. And they got water out of a stream, and we sort of washed the camouflage cream off. But, you know, it never really comes off. You know, it goes in there. And we walked into this hotel they'd booked us in. And we sort of looked like Rudo Valentino, you know, big black eyelash, you know. And we get in there and scrubbed ourselves stupid, you know.
Did the South Africans give you a bonus for that?
Yeah, they did, aye.
Oh, right.
We got back to the boss, and the boss says there's a bonus, and the guy said, thank you very much, and we got $1,000 each, and he said, well, you can have it in rand as we want. I mean, it was the next thing, the money all finished up back in his desk, and they put some money into an account for us.
Right. So you scored out a few brownie points with the South Africans.
Yeah.
How did you find the South Africans?
You know, I liked them, because the chaps who were working with there, they'd never done this tape. You know, they were, it was the beginning for them, you know. And...
Which part of the South African forces was that?
We were involved with the security police.
All right.
Aye.
Okay.
Yeah.
So where did you go from? You went from Salisbury to...
We drove from Bindura to Salisbury. Salisbury, we stopped a night at Messina, which is just over the South African border.
And
drove on straight to Kamati Port, and we got there that night. We're exhausting. The guy says, "Can you do the job tonight?" I says, "Let's go. Let's get it done. Get it over with." So, you know, we, as I say, when we did get back, we were...
But, I mean, that's, but you've been driving for what, about...
14 hours.
14 hours.
No, no.
We got, it's supposed to be about 1,000 kilometres or something, at least.
And we just got there, and I says, "Let's get it done." So they had a, they had an informer who actually took us in anyway.
Right. And what was the objective there? To blow up a house?
Yes.
And which was an ANC house, wasn't
it? Yeah, and lucky enough, we'd rehearsed for it in Rhodesia for a week beforehand.
Uh-huh.
So we came down, and I just gave a quick brief, which we'd, we'd already done.
Yeah.
Polished it up.
That I think that was quite a well-known raid, though, wasn't it? I mean, it was reported here, as far as I can recall.
I couldn't tell you.
Okay. I mean, worldwide, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, what else did you wind up doing with the South Africans?
That was the job there, and I finished in Rhodesia, and I went down and joined the South African Army.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Could you just describe that to me?
Yeah, I went down to South Africa and I joined the South African Parachute Regiment. And
okay, so you, your wife to be, was working in the hospital there.
Sorry, I got married.
All right.
I got married prior to. I knew the move was coming off to South Africa, and you know I couldn't go and leave Jane. She had a kid.
Sure.
So we actually get married in Rhodesia. So as if we did go, we went as a man and wife.
Did you have a South Africa? What passports? Do you only with one, or do you got Zimbabwe passport?
No, I never had a Zimbabwe residence permit. That was all.
All right.
And a British passport.
Right.
So I then, as I say, we travelled down, and to Rhodesia, and that was in June 1980, from Rhodesia to South Africa.
Right. Were you demobbed?
No.
What was the situation?
Yeah, I handed in 3 months' notice.
Right. At what point was that?
That was just after the elections, and the election was in end of February, beginning of March.
Right.
So it was April, May, June. Yeah, that's correct.
Yeah, you've got the Commonwealth monitoring people there. Did you meet any of those?
Yeah, I met some of them. Yeah. I feel the British Army did themselves a disservice there, and I'm sure the people who were involved in it said, "That man's got glasses, he's got pimples in his face, this guy's got a sort of turn in his eye, this guy's got a finger missing." You know, the guys that seemed to be out there didn't seem to fit in. You know, but you know, the people who looked like soldiers, you know, your infantry units and that, they were all out in the bush the whole time. So, you know, the Rhodesian Army's impression of the British Army was wimps, can you see that? Because they were very, very manly people, the Rhodesians, very much into sport. Well,
yes.
The weather loaned itself to it.
But they got, so you're saying that they seem to be sort of the rejects, excused boots type.
Honestly, you know, I think what there was, the impression I got was the people who picked those guys to come in there didn't want to cause anybody any offence by sending manly guys, you know.
All right.
And they were fairly immature as well.
What about the police? They had a few...
The bobbies came out there. They were great guys, honestly.
Yeah.
They went down a bundle, you know, the old bobbies. Yeah.
Police hat, yeah. What? Did you speak to them?
It looked out of place in Africa.
Sure.
I mean, you'd be in the middle of the bush there, and there's a guy sitting with his pith helmet type thing on, you know.
You spoke to some of them? Or?
Yeah, I did, yeah.
And you got on...
Oh, they were terrific, yeah.
Yeah. And what did they make of you?
No, they just looked at us and said, "You're a bunch of nutters."
To you?
No, the group of us. I mean, we lived in a little town called Bindura. There was 8 SAS guys actually worked for the special branch.
Right.
And, you know, we were always weight training and doing something, you know, and we actually stuck out like sore thumbs, you know. They were, all there was arms and shoulders, you know. And, you know, and we got on extremely well with them.
Okay, yeah, but they accepted you as nutters.
Yeah. They couldn't understand why somebody would come across halfway across the world to get involved in a war.
This, yeah.
It had nothing to do with them.
Yeah.
And everything was too fast moving for them. You know what I mean? Rhodesia was a heavy, heavy drinking scene. I mean, they were into this macho stuff, you know. And I mean, the police, the Rhodesian police, I mean, as soon as they knocked off duty at night, they were guzzling beer, you know, from the minute they finished till they went to their bed.
Yeah.
Yeah, go on.
Okay. So you gave in your 3 months' notice, and it was completely independent by the time you left, was it?
Yeah.
If you'd stayed on, I mean, even for a short amount of time, what would have happened to you or what happened to your former colleagues?
This is the unfortunate part. You know, the guys I trained, some of them were tortured, and I know that, you know. Mm. And it was hurtful. You know, I had one guy there called Edison, and he'd actually see the some of them had betrayed their comrades. Can you see that? Mm. And in actual fact, Edison, there was a Chinny Maranga song, you know, a freedom song actually made about him. You know, how he betrayed his men.
Oh.
And they got him and they tortured him. Another chap was killed called Lazarus. You know, and I spoke to the boss just before that we broke up, and I says, you know, we're going to have to get money for these guys, you know.
Yeah.
You know, and the boss made funds available, and I says, you know, I was moving them all over the country. You know, went to Senoia to Resapi, Resapi to back to Bindura, and then we're talking about moving them down to Chiquarra, right down on the border, you know. I says, I can't like these guys anymore. He says, break them up, and we gave them 3 months' pay each.
Could they not have found somewhere in South Africa for them?
They couldn't fit in there. You know, in actual fact, Rhodesia may have had many faults, but there was no apartheid there. Can you see that?
Yeah.
And you know, the Rhodesian African, he was a different, totally different character. Some of them actually did go to South Africa, but they all eventually made their way back to Rhodesia.
Really?
Yeah, they never. You know, the South African African, you know, black African is, he's highly politicised. Can you see that? It's an industrial country, and you know, there's heavy union power and whatnot there.
Mm. They could have put them in Namibia or somewhere, couldn't they?
They did send some up there.
Did they? Did they fare better there?
Yeah, and the other thing was, you know, a lot of Rhodesian blacks came down, and then they got involved with the Mozambican National Resistance, which actually had been handed by the Rhodesians across to the South Africans.
RENAMO, yeah.
And it was actually ran just outside Pretoria, because our camp was right next door to RENAMO, you know.
Right.
Yeah.
So you wound up. Yeah. Could you just go through it? What happened? You got in your car.
I got my car and I drove.
Packed your bags.
I drove, and you know something? I drove over Bight Bridge and I looked back and I says, Jane, and the sun was setting.
Oh, really?
Aye.
Yeah.
And I just says, we spoke. I says, it's the end of an era.
Mm-hmm.
And we booked into Holiday Inns at Petersburg.
Mm.
And Imelda had never seen a coloured television, you know, Jane's daughter.
Yeah.
And she was mesmerised, and there was a sort of... The Three Musketeers were on, and it was an Afrikaans, you know.
yeah.
And we got there, and they booked us into a hotel, and I joined the army there.
Had you made arrangements to join?
No, I hadn't.
No.
I'd sent word down that I was coming.
Oh, right.
Aye.
So you booked into the hotel, and then what happened the next day?
The next day I went to the recruiting office.
In
Pretoria.
Yeah.
And I spoke to Jane, they offered me the rank of sergeant. And I said, she says, Peter, you did this in Rhodesia. You started off as a recruit, and here you go again. She says, the rank you held in the British Army was staff sergeant. So I went back to him and I said, I think we'll leave it. And I was going to come back to Britain. He says, no, let's make you a staff sergeant.
Oh, really?
Right, so I got the rank of staff sergeant, which was my equivalent British rank. And they posted me to 44 Parachute Brigade.
Mm.
And
that's based at... Did they give you any induction?
No, they didn't. Just stuck us out of place. Stuck us out in... in actual fact, the farm that we were on was Pete Joubert's farm. You know the guy that fought the Battle of Majuba Hill?
Mm.
It was actually his farm.
Where's that near then?
It's at Harmon's Kraal, just in the outskirts of Pretoria.
Okay.
The stock is on there, and we were living like animals out there. You know, this stock is intense and whatnot, and they were bringing various guys out, and it was just it seemed to be the story of my life in the army. We set up a camp. The living conditions were fairly bad.
Mm.
The sanitation was bad, and we actually got to work and started building kitchens and whatnot, and then. I started training the Pathfinders, the Pathfinder Company.
Now, was this a new unit or what?
It was a new unit, yeah.
Okay, so what happened? They said, who was in the unit? I mean,
The unit commander was Colonel Breitenbach, a very flamboyant character in South Africa. In fact, he is the brother of Pete Breitenbach, the poet. That's his brother.
Okay, yes.
Yeah.
Is he the one that sort of... is he traditionalist, so to speak, or is he more ANC, or
the
Breitenbach poet?
Aye, the poet was ANC, and he did 10 years in jail for it.
Oh, right.
So his brother was right wing. Can you see that? Anyway, he says, right, I'm starting a Pathfinder unit. I want it run along SAS lines. So I was involved with a South African. Officer called Pete Botis. I was involved with a South African officer called Pete Botis, and we started getting the unit ready for training. So we moved up to a place on the Rhodesian border. Now it's funny, remember I told you we were going to move my guys to Chikwara Kwara, which was down in the on Limpopo. They moved me to exact opposite side of the river,
right,
a place called Mabalikwe. Okay. Where you could actually see Chikwara Kwara from.
Right.
It was just Providence. Yeah. So we started training up there, and we had an awful lot of trouble with the admin boys, you know. You'd try and get ammunition, and they were putting, you know, at the finish up, I used to just take it because they didn't know I'd taken it, because they didn't know what was there themselves.
Really?
So we did an awful lot of shooting up there. An awful lot of tactics, you know, live tactics. Yeah.
And you went to the Pretoria recruiting office. They more or less gave you a uniform and said, get on with it.
Yeah.
And so how many were in this Pathfinder unit now?
Well, we started off, there was 23 guys in it originally.
And they're all foreigners?
Yes, they were all coming in dribs and drabs.
From Rhodesia?
From Rhodesia. Yeah. And some, I finished up with 4 Italians who'd come out from South Africa, from Italia, Italy to join the South African Army.
But they had they got military experience?
Some they'd done the national service in the Falgiri.
Were they good or?
No, they weren't.
No, right. And so you're in that camp, and you're in that camp up in northern Transvaal, presumably.
Yeah.
So okay, what then transpired?
We did about 5 months solid training up there.
Right.
You know, ambushing, OPs, camp attacks, advance to contact drills, you know, contact left, contact front, contact rear, contact left, you know, immediate action drills. And the average guy fired about, sort of, anybody fired between 10 and 20 RPG rockets each, you know, I mean, it was a real experience, you know. And
so once you'd done your training.
Yeah.
What happened?
Now, I was up there on my own with them because Pete Botis was down in Pretoria.
Right.
And then we moved from there to Drakensberg and we ran the selection course down in Drakensberg, you know, at the edge of Lesotho.
Yes.
It was in the movie Zulu. You could see the sort of Drakensberg mountains in the background, 15,000 feet range, you know.
Right.
So we actually ran the selection there.
That would have been in what? Western Natal or the Free State?
Western Natal, yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Or on the edge of the Free State as well, yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. You know,
where's the nearest town to that?
The nearest town to it was...
Bethlehem, or?
Bethlehem, yeah. Have really? You been there over here?
Well, a little bit, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah.
But, okay, yeah.
What was the other place? There was a battle fought there. We used to pass Spee and Cope on the way down there.
Calenso,
that was the nearest town, right. Yeah.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. And what year was that then?
That was 80.
All right.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then what happened, a lot of guys came.
So how many were in this unit then now?
There was only about 20 odd of us.
Right.
Then. And, you know, there was guys dropping out and guys replacing them. You know, we could never actually get to grips with it.
Right.
And...
So what's the unit designated? It's 44?
It's 44 Parachute, 44 Parabrigade Pathfinder Company.
All right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And what happened after that? So...
in 1981, in about February, the colonel says to the guys, I mean, this is the thing with Breiten Back, you just walk and say, go up to the border. The guy says, we're getting bored, go to the border.
So that would be northern Namibia?
Yeah.
Right.
Up at Ondangwa.
Okay.
So they ship off and they go up to Ondangwa. And I'm sitting there and I'm grabbing guys here and there. And I've not got enough guys here on this election. So I said to Colonel, I says, Colonel, you know, I've got to go up and get a piece of the action up there. So they sent me up there in the February. I was 81. And I took 8 men up with us. And the guys were involved. They were out, the rest of the company was out with a guy called Dennis Crowcamp and Colonel Breitenbach. Colonel Breitenbach says, look, there's an operation coming off with one para. Put 2 of your men with each platoon as observers and go on the operation. So we went in and we flew in helicopters to a place called Komatu, which is just over the border, the Angolan border, and landed on the ground there. We had a little bit of a contact. And
what operation was that?
I can't remember the code name for it. You know, we went to Komatu and cleaned this little town out, and then they said, okay, carry on. And we were sweeping through the bush. And all of a sudden, we hit a camp complex, and all hell let loose. And I sat there, and there was the company commander was still back in Komatu, and there was 4 platoon commanders there, or 2 platoon commanders, I can't remember. And one of them said to me, Sergeant Major, can you break into that camp? And I looked into the bushes and I went, God help me, you know. I turned back, I says, okay, get me the pathfinders. So I could only get my hands in 6 pathfinders, including myself. So I spoke to the guys, I says, right guys, we're going to break into you. I gave them a quick briefing. I says, now listen, I've taught you to do this. We've been doing it for months on end. Let's go and earn more pay. And they just stood up and the 6 of them came with me, you know. And you know, there was none of this zigzag, we just bowled towards the trenches. Mm. And it was like the First World War, you know, it was just, ripping past, you know.
Mm.
And none of it hit us.
Now, this was against...
it was a SWAPO MPLA camp.
Right.
You know, the MPLA was protecting SWAPO. Mm.
Had you got... were there any Cubans there?
No, not in that one, no.
And what sort of vehicles had you got?
We never
but no vehicles.
No vehicles.
No vehicles,
us.
Right.
We were all on foot, yeah.
Right. So how many people were involved, roughly?
Of the Pathfinders, there was only 8 of us, but, you know, there was a company, C Company, 1 parachute
right.
battalion.
And how of the enemy?
The enemy, well, I just know we killed 78. You know, I couldn't tell you of any was in the camp.
Right, okay. And so how long did that last for?
Well, what happened is we hit upon the camp late afternoon, and... So we broke our way in, and there was a bit of hand-to-hand combat going on.
Really?
In the actual trench. I mean, I had to batter a guy to death. I had to stop using a rifle, and I, you know, smashed him with my rifle, but, you know, and I was on top of him, and the guy was extremely motivated, you know, in that he was in fire, you know. I'd set him on fire with a white phosphorus bomb. I'd cleared the bunker, and they came out, and I went to shoot him as they came out, and I had a double feed on my Galil. And, you know, it was heavy, heavy fighting. So we took the trenches, and then one para stormed across and took another line of trenches. They lost 2 guys.
Yeah.
So we get in there, and it was getting dark, and the South Africans, for some unknown reason, had this law that national servicemen, if they're not in a platoon strength, out in platoon strength with an officer, are not allowed to stay out at night. You know, so we got the message pulled back. And I said to the officer, I said, look, sir, you know, we've lost guys taking these trenches. Why don't we stay in them all night? And, you know, we're not going to have to pay for the same real estate twice.
Mm.
And they says, no, pull out. And by the time we pulled out, these guys went crazy. They started opening up as with anti-aircraft guns. So and mortaring us on the way out. So we had a guy wounded, and I carried out a wounded officer. And we lost another guy on the way out, so we lost 3. So we pulled back out, and we sat there all night, sort of licking our wounds and... You know, I got up in the morning, I was making a cup of tea for myself, and then I just heard this humming sound. And there must have been about 24 K cars came. And you could hear, you know, they were sort of dancing about in the sky. And at any one time, there was 16 K-cars over the target.
So it was a Cannon helicopter?
Aye, it's just laying into this target. It started off, the Mirages came first, and they put strikes in, and then the Impalas had a go, and then the K-cars came in, and they were really doing the business. And then we went back in and hit it late afternoon, and we came out the choppers, we captured a load of guys, and then started fighting the way through the camp again, you know. Mm. And I was clearing the bunker there, and I went in the bunker with a torch. I'd grenaded the bunker, and I walked in, and I looked, and I just out the side of my eye, and a guy's tunic had just slipped back here, and the black skin was shining, and he was just lying at the side of the bunker. I went, oh no, you know. And I didn't want to move too fast. I'd pull back, so I just pulled the pistol and went bang, bang, you know. I shot him at the side of me, and the guy was still alive, you know. Mm. Even after grenading and having been shot twice, you know. And at the end of it, it took us 2 days to take that camp, and I just sat down and fell asleep in the middle of the camp at the end of it.
Right. So, where was your unit now based?
It was, we were drifting between Hammond's Kraal, which is outside Pretoria, mm-hmm. to Ndangwa.
Right. So, how long did you spend? You spent until what time with the South Africa? Until 84?
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, what happened then was the Pathfinders were to and flown from South Africa, and then we got some vehicles, mm. and we started doing experiments with vehicles, and there was a thing called CSIR, which was a research unit.
Okay.
So this officer, I think his name was Vernon Joint, and what we did was actually got platforms, and it was a good idea. You know, you could take a Land Rover and you could make it a mortar vehicle, a cannon vehicle, twin machine guns, just by taking the base plate out. Can you see that? So, you know, if you had your vehicle there, you just lifted the platform out and you put it on, you could put a 20mm cannon on it, and it was all bolted down. So we started building these vehicles, and then it says, right, we're going back up to Southwest, and we're going to actually train on the way up there. So we left Pretoria by vehicle and headed up to Southwest Africa.
Right.
I can remember the name of the place on the way up there. You know, we were doing lagering and various drills on farms and whatnot. And we got to a place called Hot as Hell. I can remember the name. It was just
Hot as Hell.
Hot as Hell. It's on the sort of Botswana and South African border. And all of a sudden the sky went black and my hands were actually stinging. And there was sort of hailstones the size of golf balls bouncing off. I tried to drive on. The colonel says, get under a tree and get under the truck. We drove under the tree and these things, they were actually making dents in cars, you know, they were massive. And it was the first time I'd ever seen a hailstorm there. Anyway, we moved on from there, went through the Kalahari Desert, mm. Did a bit of training in the Kalahari Desert, and moved up to Southwest Africa and set up base in Ndangwa again.
How long, were you based in Ndangwa all the time? That was your proper base for the rest of your time, was
no,
it?
No, that was the base when we went to Southwest Africa.
Right. Where else did you operate or?
It was always out of Ndangwa, because okay. that was the mounting place for the operations. Can you see that?
Right. So how many operations? So you're there until 84.
Yeah.
How many operations did you do then? You know, into and you got Daisy and Protea.
I was on Daisy. I was on the beginning of Protea. I was on Carnation, because I tended to call the operations on after floors. I'm getting confused now about which all operation right. was which. We actually, up Daisy, we actually parachuted and we did an operational jump. And we jumped into a place called Techimatet, which mm-hmm. is up on, nearly up in, next to Kasinga. There was a big airborne raid done there by the South Africans. We parachuted in there and what we had, we were working in company groups, and we what would happen is the pathfinders would go, a patrol of pathfinders would move ahead, and the company would follow after them. You know, a tracker would just follow the pathfinder's spoor, bringing the company along, but the pathfinders did the navigation and actually supplied a reconnaissance screen. Can you see that?
Okay.
So I remember we jumped in, and the second day we were marching, and we had a load of areas to check out based on information received.
What was your... how did your role vary from recce commando?
They were into strategic recce, we were into tactical recce, can you see that? Okay. Although we did do some strategic jobs.
So you were directly in front of...
The paras, yeah.
The paras and the main people,
yeah.
Right,
yeah.
Of a large force, whereas these were...
They would get in and do it themselves.
But they'd be doing... Right. Recce commando would be almost... They're more of a theatre asset.
Yeah, yeah.
Am I right in saying
yeah,
that?
Yeah, they are, but we did
or
do jobs like that.
Asset, yeah.
We did do jobs that was pathfinders only, much the same role as the recce commando.
Right.
Yeah.
How did you get on with these other people?
In actual fact, we got on well with the recce commando.
Right.
And in actual fact, my training setup, they reckon I had the edge on them with some of the things. And they said, you've got to bear in mind that we've got the backing, yet you're producing your products are there.
Right.
You know, on certain things like house clearing, I was ahead of them.
Yeah.
And basic tactics, you know.
Well, how did you get on with...